No. Goldfish do not, in fact, have short attention spans. Sadly, they have no long-term memory.
Hi there, and welcome to Hav and Charles Talk Comics, episode 5 of season 4. I am one of your hosts, Charles Herring, and I'm here with my very good friend, Javier Gonzalez. Hi, Hav, how are you?
I'm good, Charles. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Really excited to be doing a podcast tonight. Hopefully it will not be a massive thunderstorm and get us shut down since we've been having rolling storms through the day. The fun of living in Dallas.
No, it's been really loud at times here, so I'm waiting for just a huge thunderclap to shake our house or something. Or just, it's been, you know what, I'm just going to jinx the crap out of it. It's been a while since we lost power in a bad thunderstorm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Way to jinx us. So this could be fun. Thanks. Thanks, yeah. Hav. Thanks.
You're welcome.
So we are, Hav, well, I guess we can talk about this later. I do want to kind of start out with a little something. I do it in the middle sometimes, but since this follows up from our last podcast or two podcasts ago, Patrick sent us an email.
Hey!
Yeah, he was, I mentioned that he was kind of perturbed on the last one that we did not invite him to talk about The Last Ronin.
And because we did Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes, yes. So he, Ronin. Yeah, he wrote, "Hello, Hav and Charles. It was with great disturbance when I began to listen to the episode where you discussed The Last Ronin. The one comic book I read as a youth that I did not steal from your closet, Charles, and you did not think to ask me about it. Just some thoughts I thought I would have shared if had I been asked to." Did that seem passive-aggressive? That seemed passive-aggressive to me.
Yeah, maybe.
"The origin of the Turtles was less of an homage to Daredevil and more of a parody. It was also a parody of teenagers and mutants being very popular comic book tropes at the time, as well as black and white, dark, gritty, ultra-violent comics making the scene. They just mooshed all those things together with talking animals, which were usually drawn to be cute. The first several volumes of the comic were very violent. They were literally trained as assassins to kill Shredder to gain revenge for Splinter. Baxter Stockman was the second arc villain. He created Mousers, which almost killed Splinter. That is also how they met April O'Neil and Casey. It started getting lighter and more child-friendly once they realized they could sell toys, hence why most people know the TV shows and movies, but the tone of the original comics was very much like The Last Ronin. That being said, I'm a huge fan of all properties and really enjoyed it as a kid, and truly enjoyed this comic. I hope we end up actually getting an R-rated live-action version of this. Thank you for making me aware of it." So thank you very much, Patrick, for writing in. I really do wish I had brought it up to you. There was, I think I told you in person, we were just, everything was kind of rushed with the way we've been doing the podcast right now, and I didn't have time to do anything other than the podcast. So if we do another Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles something, I will attempt to contact you about it.
Well, there you go. Well, hey, at least your brother listens to the podcast.
Yes, he does. He listens. And he seems to know how to contact us through havandcharles.com, where you can send us an email. Now, in fairness, it's not hard for him to know how to contact us through that since he set that up.
Right.
So thank you, Patrick, for setting up the form that you then use to email us. We appreciate it.
I'm half joking because, you know what? I don't know if my brother listens. I know I've mentioned to him that me and you have a comic book podcast. And he may very well listen, and he just hasn't said it because we're like that. We won't say stuff like that to each other.
But he's our
if he does
fan.
Listen, I apologize.
He's our biggest fan, probably. And probably. He's just never going to tell me. I mean, according to the emails he sent and said, not for telling Hav. No.
There you go.
Now that would be hilarious. So, Hav's brother.
Yeah, Carlos.
Carlos, I was, see, I... I,
yeah,
I
you're going to get it.
I was going to get it because I was like, wait, we have the same name.
Yes.
So, Carlos, if you would like to send an email through the portal if you listen and not have Hav know about it, I would love it and I will keep that secret. Oh, who am I fucking with? No, I will immediately tell Hav. Don't bother. I'd do it on a podcast. I would surprise the hell out of him and then I might alienate you. So don't do that. But just keep it a secret if you listen. As far as we know, you're our biggest fan.
So, as we usually do, the last time you suggested we read Pulp. And I suggested we read The Sensational She-Hulk. Sensational She-Hulk came out in May of 89 with issue number one. Ed Brubaker's Pulp was a graphic novel, one shot, came out in January of 2021. So I think mine's a little bit before yours.
If we use the transitive property.
Sure. Okay. And so, yeah, John Byrne was the writer, artist, didn't ink it, and had come back from DC after doing the reboot after Crisis of Superman. And I think this is one of the first things, if not, well, I don't want to, I don't know for sure. It seems like time-wise, since this came out in 89, it had to have been one of the first things he did coming back to Marvel. But let me just, as I usually do, ask Charles, what'd you think?
I liked it. But I mean, I love She-Hulk. It was fun.
I had not read it. This is, again, one of those comic books I picked up either off the rack at a grocery store or B. Dalton or Walden Books or at a comic book store that were just starting to come out back in the late 80s, early 90s. But I want to say time-wise, it was probably the former, the B. Dalton type, you know, spinner rack or this rack at the grocery store. Yeah, I just remember this was coming out. You're going to hate this. At about the same time, Justice League International was coming out. So you had the Marvel doing the funny ha-ha, and you had John Byrne doing the funny ha-ha, although in a different way and at a different level, I think, with this She-Hulk run.
Yeah, because when you listen to this again, you're going to hear yourself. You had Marvel doing the funny ha-ha, and then you had John Byrne doing the funny ha-ha.
Oh, whoops.
She-Hulk. Yeah, which is actually, that's a Freudian slip, you admitting that Justice League is not funny.
There you go. You frame that. You should get that audio like in the little thing. Hey, is it because you did the thumbs up into that?
I guess so.
I want to do it. Do the thumbs up now. Okay, so Charles did thumbs up to me through the FaceTime, and it came up as a little bubble on our FaceTime feed, and maybe that's a feature I did not know about.
Except we keep recreating it. It's not doing that.
And Charles just gave me the bird to test.
Just trying to see what kind of hand gestures will work. So
John Byrne, longtime comic book artist, writer, started out with Chris Claremont. I think his first really big claim to fame was 70s. I don't even know if he got into the 80s with Claremont on X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, if memory serves. Then did a long run on Fantastic Four. Then jumped over to DC in 86 for Superman.
Yeah, he rebooted Superman after Crisis, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Limited series and then ongoing series. And then eventually, you know, that came to an end. So, I think back when he was, at one point in time, man, he was writing and drawing Fantastic Four and writing and drawing Alpha Flight.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't know what kind of pay rate he was getting or if he just worked 80, 90 hours a week, because I don't understand how that's possible.
Yeah, that's impressive. I mean,
well, I've also heard that some of these guys would have shadow drawers that could, like, they would do a rough layout. This is all, I don't know this specifically.
Okay.
About Byrne, but I know back in the olden days, some of them did, more successful ones. The other thing I would mention, he also did, man, I don't know if it was after She-Hulk or about this time, he was also doing West Coast Avengers at some point after they rebooted that, or not rebooted, after they started that.
Okay.
And when he was on his run in West Coast Avengers, speaking of the funny, he introduced the Great Lakes Avengers.
Now, those are funny, yes.
So he had a tendency to like to do the
humor.
The funny.
Yeah, he liked to have fun. There was some humor in the Superman run he did.
Yep. No, there was.
I've read some of those. I kind of liked them.
I'm trying to see what other notes I have about Byrne. He also co-created Scott Lang and James Rhodey Rhodes.
Okay.
So there's all that. But so about this, you just kind of start. Oh, I had never read. So when this starts out, it's a Marvel premiere or something. Marvel presents. That little first little snippet that starts out this collection where she's on the phone with Thing, that was not in issue number one. That was a preview in some kind of little one of those anthology series.
Oh, yeah. It was like something like a free comic book giveaway thing. It was a, yeah, they.
Something.
Yeah. It was a, hey,
it
we're going to.
It wasn't clear.
Yeah.
It wasn't even clear to me what it was exactly, but yeah.
Yeah, it was a promo. They wrote a little promo for the release of the comic.
There was something about it that made me think it came out in one of those like Marvel premiere, like it was a short little, because those would have like backup stories. They'd have like a main character like Wolverine, and then the backup story would be rotating characters.
Yeah. Okay.
So it could have been in something like that.
Well, yeah,
that's what I was thinking.
And it's probably where they introduced, they put it in that to kind of boost the release of the new thing, because clearly it was at the end of it, it was talking about the new series, the Sensational She-Hulk.
Right. Well, here it is. So it's Marvel Comics presents, if I can get my computer work, 4 all new features. And it's her along with, it looks like, a Black Panther story and a Cyclops story and then something else. Right. I just need to go pick up Marvel Comics presents 4 all new features. Marvel Comics presents number 18. Looks like, because look, Cyclops and She-Hulk. Holy crap.
So this was a fun comic. It patterned and they talked about it. This is where she was breaking the fourth wall. And I wrote down on this, is this fourth wall breaking? Was that before Deadpool was breaking the fourth wall?
I'm almost positive. Okay. This is late 80s. So okay. I don't think.
Yeah, no, I, know, yeah.
Liefeld doesn't even come into the picture till the early 90s. Or
okay.
Right,
that's true. That's true. I wasn't thinking about when. And Liefeld didn't have him breaking the fourth wall, did he? I thought that was added later. I mean, because he was just a pure, unadulterated ripoff of
Deathstroke.
Anyway, yep. we talked about that last week. Or 2 weeks ago. Or actually, yeah, you and I talked about this. I think it was last time. Yeah, well, last time.
Was it 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, I think we talked 2 weeks ago. So, yeah, I saw that. And it's interesting. There's no explanation for her doing this.
No.
That's the thing. Because I was I told you I took notes. These were a couple of the notes I took. It was interesting. I'm not knocking it. It was just weird because the explanation for Deadpool doing it is Deadpool's insane. So Deadpool is insane, and he talks to because he thinks he's in a comic book. Just the fact that he is in a comic book is one thing, but he also thinks he's in a comic book because he's insane. And then there's Gwenpool. She talks to the comic book because she's from a reality like ours where these are comic books, and she's gone into this reality, so she knows she's a comic book character. So she talks to she breaks the fourth wall, and her powers are being able to move like She-Hulk did when she went between the panels, which I liked. I thought that was great. It's just interesting how they this started with this, and now they're at least giving them reasons. It was just kind of weird that she just can. It's like, how is this working?
So you get her breaking the fourth wall to the reader. You get her breaking the fourth wall talking to Byrne directly.
Yes. Yeah, telling her, what are you doing, Byrne? Yes.
And then you get the notes on the corners back and forth between Bobby Chase, the editor of the comic book, the editor-in-chief, Tom DeFalco. There's an issue, too. There's this whole thing where, like, this is like an issue of Architectural Digest. They're just touring her freaking new apartment. When is the action going to start? And then Byrne's like, wait for it.
Yeah.
Wait for it. It's
yeah. It's like they left editorial. No, it was great. I really enjoyed that. That was one of the things I used to like in the 80s as a kid when I was reading Marvel Comics was sometimes you got this editorial comments like that. You don't seem to get that as much anymore, but they just do this snarky little asides about stuff just in a little box, editor's note. And there'd be this, and you have to wonder how many of those were an editor's note that they're like, yeah, okay, that one was good. You can have this in.
Maybe. Well, and I think probably at this time, look, Byrne was John Byrne, the way I'm trying to think who is like Mike, probably like Brian Michael Bendis. What's his name? Bendis?
Brian Michael Bendis, yeah.
Probably on level of how Brian Michael Bendis is now back then, given his runs that he had had.
Yeah.
Like he was, they probably were more
free reign. Yeah.
Right. Like, hey, you know what? She-Hulk hasn't had a comic book in a while.
Yeah. You want to play around with it? Go for it.
Go nuts. And sure enough.
Well, and they, what I loved, and they, she talked about it during the thing, they were mirroring a lot of the way that the original arc, the original run of the Fantastic Four did.
Yes. Or they also mentioned that like Dr. Doom was in a certain issue, or the Toadmen were in the second issue of Incredible Hulk.
First issue was an origin, second issue was this, and she's the difference between what she gets and what they got, because the aliens that you never see again were was in one of the first issues, the first few issues, and then she gets these aliens, except they weren't really aliens. I mean, everything, it was great. It really was for its time.
Okay.
No. For its time, one of the legitimately so much writing.
There is a lot of exposition, no?
Yes.
Speaking of that, did you like, it was in one of the later, like fourth issue, I think, around there. Because Wheezy knows she's in a comic book, or was a comic book, a Phantom, the blonde Phantom.
Yes, the blonde Phantom.
Because she was no longer in the comics, her and her husband aged, he died, and she's like, screw this, I'm getting in a comic book.
I gotta get in another comic book. So she's the reason why the DA calls She-Hulk to become an attorney, because she became an assistant in order to get into a She-Hulk comic book. So that was brilliant.
So she's aware of the comic book thing going on. And also, what's interesting, given how much in recent comic books where She-Hulk being an attorney is such a big deal, back here, she was like, oh, I don't know if a big, 6'7" green woman, hulking woman could be an attorney. Like that was weird. Now it's like, no, Jennifer Walters, aka She-Hulk, is an attorney. She practices law and is a superhero. No biggie. They make references to a lot of things. She's going into space, I think, or one time when she's bouncing off of Reed Richards. Yeah, she says, oh, maybe I could say up, up, and away, but I think that would be a trademark infringement.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of... And then she also mentions that she's about to lose her top, and she's like, whoa, 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 this isn't in the Epic, comic line. I don't think we can do that.
Yeah.
Because Epic at the time was a more risque, adult-oriented. And, her label on her top said approved by the Comics Code Authority or something on the label.
Yes.
She also freaks out when she thinks her head's cut off. Go ahead. I was going to say, she also freaks out because it cliffhangs when they're about to cut her head off. The Headmen, of all things, that weird group of supervillains, which was weird and awesome, I thought, were about to cut off her head to put the head of their associate Chandu on a psychic or some kind of, mentalist, put his head onto her body. And then she is in the next issue, goes, oh my God, have I been in here for 30 days? Oh wait, no, it's not like the new universe where it's in real time
it's
only been hopefully
happens.
A few hours.
That's right. Yeah, the whole head thing, I have that as a screenshot. No, wait, don't get a grip. This isn't the universe. My book operates on Marvel time. So it was pretty funny. The whole thing. She also, Dr. Bong.
I remembered the Headman because I remember thinking it was so fucked up. Do not remember Dr. Bong at all.
Dr. Bong.
Oh yeah, come on. It was too young.
You weren't gonna get that. But he had a bell for a head. But so instead of Dr. Doom, she got Dr. Bong.
In her fifth issue or fourth,
whatever issue it was.
And what's interesting, when they go into the TV shows, they're more realistic versions of the TV shows, like the Jetsons.
Yes.
They're knockoffs, the Jetsons, the Flintstones, what have you. It's actually pretty funny. A RoboCop makes an appearance at one point.
The whole space trucker thing.
Oh, that was weird.
I mean, that whole thing. And that was real. There was there was space truckers. And because it was all about, because the Cannonball Run stuff. So they did, they had a trucker comic book. And then when they finished it, one of them went off into space. So now they're chasing him off into space. It was like, oh my God.
And probably Burton was like, hey, nobody cares about these guys. I get to play in this part of the sandbox now.
Oh my Lord.
Another note, there was also a big spread where she's cutting through the panel. And in the comics back then, they don't anymore. They used to have what the issues were worth, where somebody was selling them through mail order. And there's a big double page spread where they have little funny asides about all the different comic books at the time. Like,
oh man, I read the whole thing.
Yeah.
Those were good. I legit read them all. I was like, oh my, why am I, including, there was at one point of them, I can't believe you're reading all of this.
Yeah, no, there's.
That was halfway through it.
He's just taking jabs at, Starbrand is a new universe title that was coming out at the time. 1 through 10, I pay you. 11 through 19, there isn't enough money in the world. These are classics. Classics.
Yes.
Never be a book like it again.
I think
Byrne was on those issues, by the way.
I think
Byrne was on 11 through 19 of Star Brand back then.
I bought a lot of the New Universe when I was a kid.
I did too.
Yeah.
I've toyed with trying to maybe suggest. There were a couple that Light Mask, I think I liked.
I can't remember any of them at all. And they're in a trunk. I could find some of them, but I can't remember anything about any of them. It is. Yeah. It was a different time for comic books.
Oh, yes, it was. Well, look, I'm just rereading part of that double page spread. It's really, we could just sit here and go through it. It's really funny.
That makes good pod. You sitting and reading to yourself.
Right? Right? And then what's with the henchman, the henchwoman person for Dr. Bong being like a weird...
Sexy duck?
Yeah.
A sexy duck lady. I mean, it was a woman's body, a sexy woman's body with a duck face.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like you do.
Uh-huh.
Like, I was thinking, like, Howard the Duck's, like, out there.
Except Howard the Duck was a... Except Howard the Duck looks like... Okay, that's true. Howard the Duck does like to date women in our universe.
Yeah. I don't know. It was a lot. I did not remember Dr. Bong.
Oh, yeah.
I think it went way over my head back then. I think I was in maybe a freshman in high school or eighth grade.
Yeah.
When this came out. When did I say? May of 89? Oh, yeah. This is... No, May of 89. I'm a ninth, going from ninth grade to 10th grade. So I caught this right at the tail end of me reading comics, too, which is kind of perfect regularly.
Yeah, and you were also hitting the bong at that point. How'd you miss it?
No, I mean, that isn't... Well, hey, I've never done drugs as far as anybody knows.
As far as everyone listening to this podcast knows, yes, I'm sure no one... So if you have any knowledge of Hav's illicit drug use and you listen to this podcast, you can email us at havandcharles.com.
I did not. Hey, I'm an officer of the court. Okay. Although that was way before.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure this is past the statute of limitations. If you have something within the statute of limitations about Hav using drugs, feel free to email us.
No, look, in high school, I was still a really goody two-shoes high school. There was not, I think I had like a few drinks my senior year, like a couple and drinks, like a beer and beers. Anyway, so no, it was a lot of fun. I don't know if there's much more to say about it. It was
a fun comic. It was definitely worth the read. I mean,
even though it was verbose, I think it was very much.
Oh yeah. So much talking.
John Byrne, a lot more of the wordy words. Mm-hmm. I still felt like it was a pretty quick read. I didn't feel like.
Oh yeah, it didn't weigh us down. Because it was fun, and you wanted to get through each story because it was entertaining, not because you were like, "Oh, I have to finish this so I can do a podcast." So there's those two.
Yeah, no, that is true. What else was there? It made me want to read more of this, and I always say that, but it really did. Like I read this for a while. This is one of the ones where I kept on going for issues and issues.
See, I was not reading comic books at this time, and I would not have read this. I had read She-Hulk and other stuff prior to this when I was reading, but this She-Hulk I never read. So it was nice to read what the character had become.
Well, and I fell in love with She-Hulk because she was in John Byrne's run on Fantastic Four, especially like the second part of that run.
Yeah.
Where Ben Grimm has taken a break. I forget why.
Yeah, I think I read some of that.
So she's in that. And then part of the David Stern, John Buscema, Tom Palmer, the inker, run on Avengers. At the end of that run, she's a member at the end of Avengers after the one that we read at the very beginning of this whole podcast thing, the siege on Avengers Mansion thing.
Mm-hmm.
She becomes a full-time member of that group. So I liked her. And I think it's also interesting that this is coming out, albeit later in the 80s, on the heels of everything getting darker, especially in DC with Dark Knight and Watchmen having come out just 3 years earlier. Mm-hmm. And this is all just fun.
It is. It is. And like we've said, it's important to have fun comics sometimes. They don't all have to be dark and gritty. We can enjoy things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I enjoyed reading it again. I'm glad I suggested it. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I'm glad you suggested it as well. I liked it. I actually had thought about reading that on my own because you had talked about it before, and I was like, oh, it's on Hoopla. I could do that. Plus, I could get it on Marvel Unlimited. I'm sure it's there as well. So
she and just maybe worth noting, She-Hulk created by Stan the Man Lee, and I think, like I just mentioned, I think it was John Buscema. I looked at that earlier back in like. Trying to get to the Wikipedia. But
do you know why they created it?
I think I do, but go ahead.
From what I understand, the reason why they created it was during the Incredible Hulk TV show. And anything that they can use anything in the comics for that TV show when you do these rights things. But if they create it for the TV show, Marvel wouldn't own that. So Marvel was like, oh, wait. And I have to wonder if he didn't hear about a pitch meeting about something about a female Hulk and maybe a relative. And he's like, no, F that. So we need a She-Hulk. And off they went. I did like, too, that she mentioned that somebody called me the She-Hulk and I didn't like it at the first. But now I do, because that was such part of the arc of the She-Hulk TV show. I was like, so that came from there. It was like, this is a dumb name, even back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Burns like, no, she didn't like it. Come on. When she originally got it, it was like, oh, what the fuck? She-Hulk.
They mention in this run that she's stuck as being She-Hulk. She can't revert back to human form. You remember them mentioning that?
No, I missed that. Okay, that makes more sense. So she can't go back and forth then.
Right.
She just is She-Hulk. Okay.
They mentioned it's a one-off little thing about she got some extra dose, and maybe they have a reference to a comic where that happened. She got some extra gamma dose where now she can't revert back, and of course, okay. They apparently eventually fix that or reboot that. I was also wondering if they did this because the whole thing about DC forgetting about Captain Marvel, and then as soon as the phrase or term Captain Marvel hadn't been, I forget how many years it is, 10 or 20, where if you don't, it's some kind of time frame that if it's not used, it's up for grabs. And DC, after buying the rights from Fawcett Comics, let it lapse.
Stealing.
There you go. So I don't feel bad for DC. Well, I'm never going to feel bad for DC or Warner Brothers. Marvel jumped on it in Captain Marvel. And now since then, you have the whole Shazam versus Captain Marvel thing at DC that confuses the crap out of people. So that's all I have to say about that.
Okay. That's all right.
Yeah. Any of the in-betweens?
No, I kind of did our in-between thing before. We're both on Blue Sky. He's Havgonzo, and I'm Herring Red on Blue Sky, and there is a Blue Sky page for the comic that is JCTC.
Also, I just got a notification that direct messaging through Blue Sky is a new feature. So,
So if you want to see Hobbs' penis, follow him.
Whoa, wow, you with the sex and the death in the bathing suit parts with you all the time.
Now that was just when they were talking about that it was coming out. All the ladies are like, God damn it. You know what's going to happen now.
Yeah, well, as long as that one politician out of New York, Wiener.
Oh, God. Seriously, your fucking name is, oh, my Lord.
Yeah, and that was his thing.
That's his, well, yeah, no
his, shit. His last just, name's Wiener, and his thing was sending them dick pics.
Here it is. Hey, Wiener's Wiener.
That's a weird reference I know out of nowhere. Well, hey, last time you mentioned that you wanted us to read this graphic novel. And I'm doing the quotes, graphic novel.
It's just a comic book, Hob. It's a comic book. But it's, yes, okay, it truly is a graphic novel. It was planned out as just one thing, and I won't spoil it. Hob will get to it pretty quick.
Give me a second here. Yeah. Don't steal my bits here. It's called Pulp. It is by Ed Brubaker. The art is by Sean Phillips and Jacob Phillips. It came out in January of 2021. It is an 80-page graphic novel, one shot. I really enjoyed it. It is not unusually, it is just very timely, I think. And that's what comics can do that are done well like this one. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's diametrically opposed to Sensational She-Hulk. This is gritty. This is serious stuff. It's sad. It makes you angry. It makes you think about what's going on today. And that's what I'll start off with. You suggested it. You had read it before?
Yeah, I did not remember reading it. That's funny as hell, because I read it. Once I started reading it, I was like, oh, wait a minute, I read this. I read it a few years ago, and I I think I read it and was like, I'm going to suggest this, and I never got around to it. And then it came up in my, it might have been, I thought it was in a recommendation, and it might have been, or it was a favorite on Hoopla. And I was like, huh. And then I skimmed the synopsis. I'm like, boy, that sounds really right up my alley. And so, yes, I have read it. This was the second time I read it, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it better as it got going. It was kind of a slow start as you built the character, which was not, that's not necessarily a bad thing. It pays off the fact that they built the character in the beginning, but I really enjoyed it. It's exactly what it's called, pulp. It is about a guy who is writing for the pulp magazines. So just like they had comic books, they had science fiction books and Western books and all of these anthology books with...
But magazines.
Yeah, magazines. Yeah, yeah. That just had short stories in them. And they had running short stories, and he was the writer of the Something Kid, right?
Yes, he was doing the Red River.
The Red River Kid?
But in real life, so he is Max Winters.
Yes.
Is our protagonist. He's the writer. It opens up with him in the office, and they cut his rate, and the guy's just a dick. That's his publisher or
yes,
whatever, the editor, and just says, what, take it or leave it. What are you still doing this? You're old. Kind of just talking down to him.
Yes. Yeah.
And
you
get
should
a
be
good...
retired, and this is, you should feel lucky. Now, this is during the Great Depression, just to give you an idea. So
1939. Yeah. I think they say specifically, it's right after. 19,
yeah, it's 1939. Coming off
the Great Depression. We're about to go into the big one. So,
sure.
But go ahead.
But the Depression was, the money was still tight. So he gets the money, he gets mugged and has a heart attack.
Now, well, is that when he's breaking up the thing on the platform, or he gets mugged?
Well, he gets mugged after what by breaking up. That's right. I forgot. Yes. Somebody was going after a Jewish guy, right?
I want to say, or some ne'er-do-wells were, I'm trying to remember now, and I didn't read this too long ago, which is kind of sad that I'm blanking on it. I'm going to it too. But anyways, it turns out he's got a bad ticker.
Yeah. Just collapsed right over. Just went down like a,
yep.
Insert something.
Like you do.
Yeah. Yeah. They were going after a young Hasidic Jewish kid.
That's right, with their time making fun of his curly hair and
and he says, hey y'all, he's had enough of your crap, and then they beat the hell out of him, and then he has a heart attack, then they steal his money, and he flashes back. It turns out he's writing about this outlaw, and it turns out he's writing about himself and his brother or his best friend. Can't remember.
His best friend. I think his brother died early on in their exploits.
He and his best friend, who were...
actually called Heck.
Yeah.
Which is the name of the kind of second fiddle in his pulp comics. Or not pulp. They're not comics. I guess they're just story. Pulp stories.
Yeah, they're stories. They're stories. But he gets caught. They get... I mean... He's just basically writing his exploits, but more like they're heroes instead of they were just robbing people and killing people. And he was a bad guy, sort of. He did get his start kind of the way some of the outlaws that we know about got their start. They got involved in these. They got burned out by the ranchers.
These land barons were battling each other, and then they're used as the fodder, the armies.
Yeah, like Billy the Kid.
Like the movie, Billy, exactly.
Yeah.
And when the pulp magazine he was writing for, I remember I just found it. It's called Six Gun Westerns. Just Six Gun Western. And he wants to write a story at the beginning. He's pitching the story, or writes a story about the Red River Kid and Heck retiring to Mexico. And the publisher or the editor or whatever is like, no.
Yeah.
We don't want to do that. We just keep to the formula. And he points out that the creator, author of Conan the Barbarian, had done something similar, where they did some stories about Conan getting older,
and they were
but
the
also
most
kept on
ones.
And kept on doing the ones about Conan being young and just the kind of formulaic stuff. And Vedder's like, no, I know better. And he's like, oh my god, I hate you. So all that.
Yeah. So once he gets, once he realizes he lost his money, so he wants to go and find out if he can write more, or he wrote something else, and he gets turned down. And I screenshot this, but I'm flipping through it right now. And he's like, no, we've got way too many. We got backlog of stories. I've got filler stories for a long time. And he's like, what do you mean? And he says, yeah, well, I hired writers and they're writing the stories. We own your character. It's right. Pay, read your contract. And then
exactly
he goes,
what happened to here, all of them back then.
Here. Then he goes, well, this is my nephew, Sydney. Sid, meet Max Winter. You got that, didn't you?
Sydney? No, I guess I didn't.
You don't get that? The nephew of the guy in charge?
Publisher? Well, yeah. That was Stan Lee then, right?
There you go. Yeah.
Okay, but his name wasn't Sydney originally.
I got you. But that was Stan Lee. That was a jibe at Stan Lee being the nephew's, being a cousin or a nephew or whatever, relative, and all of a sudden just writing all of this crap that other people created. That had to be.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. I think you're right.
A Stan Lee shot.
Yes.
Yeah, he only has to pay him a penny a word.
A penny a word.
Yeah.
Even in 1939, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, that was ridiculous.
So they're at a movie theater at some point, yes. And he gets up because he's having some issues, and he notices them taking some money from a truck to the theater to the safety, you know, like the Brinks armored truck.
Yeah.
And he's thinking back to his old days. So
yeah.
Robin Banks.
He's like, this will be easy to do.
Stagecoaches and trains. He cases it. He tells his I think wife, or at least his significant other's Rosa. And he talks about he had a wife and a daughter, and you find out, I don't think I'm spoiling anything, he lost them in the Spanish flu epidemic. Do you remember that?
Hey, everybody, this is Charles with Hav and Charles Talk Comics. I'm doing a kind of an intro again because we had some technical difficulties while recording this podcast, and Hav and I had to regroup for this. So there might be some parts of one of the comics, the pulp, cut out, and we're just going to pick up where we think we were able to left off and finish talking about this comic. So what we were talking about, we had just gotten to the time talking about where our main character had been casing the robbery that he was going to do after his heart attack, right? That's what we were talking about?
Right. He's at the theater and he goes out because he's starting to have chest pains again. And he's having one of those episodes where he's like, not here, not now, not like this. And of course, our protagonist, our hero of this story is Max Winters, a pulp writer that he's, you know, like we said, he used to do this thing for, this was his thing back in when he was a cowboy bandit with Heck and his brother. And so he's like, oh, look, I'm going to go back and do this again, because he wanted to provide for Rosa, his significant other at the time. And so he spends time doing that. And then I think this is right where we cut off and we started having the technical difficulties. Then he's about to approach to like pull off the heist. And Jeremiah Goldman, an old Pinkerton that used to track him, never caught up with him, says, tell me you're not going to do that. And stops him dead at his tracks and says, let me buy you a drink.
Yeah. Yeah, and when they get there, he pulls out the old wanted poster that he had on him. It was great. I really liked the character of the Pinkerton agent.
Oh, no. So Jeremiah Goldman talks about, you know, hey, by the way, he was reading Max Winters' stories, and like, look, man, you're just telling everybody your life story just in you know, dressing it up for the fans, but you didn't even change much. I mean, it's like Red River Kid instead of whatever he was called, Red something, and Heck is still called Heck. So they're catching up, and they're respectful. You get the feeling they're being respectful adversaries or ex-adversaries at this point. And he asks, somehow it comes up why Jeremiah's not part of the Pinkertons anymore. And he talks about Henry Ford didn't want a Jewish guy working on one of his cases, and he got essentially shit-canned. I think it's well known now that Henry Ford was a Nazi sympathizer back then. A lot of people were. Lindbergh went over and inspected the Luftwaffe, the German Air Force, and was an admirer of theirs.
Oh, yeah.
So
Ford. Ford was a absolute, complete, and total. Henry Ford was a fucking Nazi.
He wasn't alone in the United States.
Oh yeah, no, there were lots of. Well, as they did, there was a whole Nazi party sending money back to the thing, and that's where we get into. He came to him because the Pinkerton agent. He's a Jewish man, and he wants to do something about this. And his idea, he brought it up. He's like, let's rob them. They're having this big thing, and this did happen at Madison Square Garden. They had a gigantic fucking Nazi rally in the 30s
that filled Madison Square Garden.
Yes, they'd had a Trump rally and filled Madison Square Garden. Oh, I'm sorry. It just popped out.
Meant MAGA. You meant MAGA. Oh, I'm sorry. We were talking Nazis.
Yes, yes.
So what I, and you know, I told Julie about this. So the Bund, B-U-N-D as in David, B-U-N as in Nancy D. This was a thing that was, had a foothold and a strong foothold in the United States, especially, and even, especially in the Northeast. And when I talked to Julie about it, because she's, you know, a history major also. If you think about it too, for every person that was in Madison Square Garden for this rally that actually happened, how many other people were there in New York, in New York State, in New York City, New York State, and in the United States, 100, 1,000, 10,000 that were either straight up Nazis, Nazi sympathizers that didn't just, that were, go ahead.
What about today is making you not think there was at least that many people that were fascists back then? I mean,
exactly. The timeliness.
Yeah. Timeliness
of this is just scary.
Yes. Yes, that, it is.
Well, you know, call them alt-right, call them neo-Nazis, whatever.
Call them MAGA.
Call them MAGA, Christian fascists, whatever. You look, let me be clear, I'm not besmirching Christian. Christianity. It's these Christian fascists that want to appoint a king in the form of Donald Trump. Okay. Anyways, so Jeremiah Goldman, that's our moment of soapbox politics, everybody. You're welcome. Jeremiah Goldman convinces, not very hard. It wasn't very hard to do. Max Winters always kind of saw himself as a Robin Hood kind of guy back in the day. And this was an easy one. It was a win-win. We get to punch the Nazis in the face and get them where it hurts in the pocketbook. And so they study them.
Yeah. So the idea was when they're at the rally, that's when they could go to their headquarters and steal all of this money that they're saving in the safe. They're going to steal all this money. And so they plan this. And
I don't want to spoil it, but what happens? They go and...
you're not spoiling it. We're talking about it. There's no money. There's no money. One, it doesn't go down as easily as they thought it should. But two, there's no money because that was not really the plan. The plan was he wanted all of the information of all of the people that were fucking supporting the Nazis here that didn't want it known that they were fucking Nazis.
He wanted the ledgers. He wanted the list of the membership, of the donations, of the contributors, the people on the mailing list. And he got that. Yep. And that's gold to him because he can expose all these fucking Nazis for the assholes they are. But unfortunately, Max Winters has a heart attack.
Yes.
When they're in the getaway car and fades to black, and then he wakes up in the hospital.
Yeah.
But Jeremiah's there and says, would you have done it otherwise? I'm sorry. But then he gives him the note to a house in Queens. Yeah,
he gives him the note to a house in Queens.
He gave him a chunk
of money.
It was an enormous amount of money for 1939.
Yes, it was a good chunk of money. And he decides he was going to give it to, he puts it all in his wife's name or his girlfriend. I don't know. Rose's name, because he says, two heart attacks. I just want to have a place to retire. And then...
And you see him fantasizing about the future, where he's in the cot, or what do you call it? The thing?
A hammock?
That hangs between the trees?
A hammock.
Thank you, a hammock.
You're welcome.
He's in a hammock in the backyard, taking a nap or reading, and it's idyllic, and you're like, please. But you kind of know, given the way this comic's going, he's going to go visit Jeremiah, right?
Yes.
And he sees people taking somebody out with the face covered.
Yep.
On a stretcher, and that he fell or down the stairs or something.
Yes,
and then he goes
fell
and
down the stairs.
Jeremiah had lived, was living in this thing where there was a known Nazi that lived in the same tenement or building that was beating up on his sister.
Yeah.
And then he had enough of it, confronted him, and apparently they killed him.
Yeah. He gets that information from the guy's sister.
And then, in no short order,
he gets mad.
Max decides,
fuck it. I'm going to go out in a blaze of glory. He finds out
where they gather.
I'm going to take care of this. It's not so much that he knows he probably ain't going to survive, but he's made that decision. Yeah.
Yes. Well, and then, you know, so he goes to their bar and he says, I forget the Nazi asshole's name. I'm looking for so-and-so. They say I was right over there at the bar, and he goes up to him and says something. Jeremiah Goldman was a friend of mine, and fuck you or something. And then he pulls out and he burns him down.
Yeah.
He shoots him dead.
He just fucking kills him.
And then he shoots. And of course, he doesn't survive the gunfight. But there are a couple parts in there that reminded me of other comics that we have read fairly recently. All throughout this comic, it's him saying, not here, not now. Like almost like The Dark Knight. This would not be a good death. This is not the way I want to go out.
Yeah, he did.
This was a good death for Max Winters. Yeah,
he decided that was, and you know what? For the life he lived, that was a good death for him.
And then the other part, I think, I don't think I'm misremembering this. He's in the shootout, he has a flashback to where he's wearing the cowboy hat and a younger kid in a shootout, which reminded me of the original Hollis Mason from Watchmen, where he's fighting the kids at the end and they're going to kill him. They're killing him in his apartment. I don't know if you remember the original Owlman or Night Owl.
Oh, yeah.
Rather.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And he's flashing back to when he was, you know, there's a flashback where he's in the shootout in the bar. And I swear there's a flashback panel where it's Max Winters back when he was younger 40 years ago. And he's going out in a blaze of glory like he kind of thought he would back then. But now it's 1939, not 1899, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Anyways, this was such a good comic.
Everything about it, Charles, was just wonderful. I enjoyed it very much. I'm glad I suggested it.
Pat yourself on the back. Go ahead.
No,
it's okay.
No. Like I told you earlier, I really had forgotten I read it, and I think I read it sometime last year or maybe 2 years ago looking for stuff to read, and it popped back up, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna do this sight unseen. So then I started reading it, and I was like, oh wait, I did read this, and I'm glad I reread it and redid it, because it's just such good pulp noir stuff, and Brubaker is good for that kind of stuff. He just does an excellent job
Western.
Of it.
He did Criminal. I've never read Criminal. Have you read Criminal? I've heard nothing but good things, of course.
I have not. I'm really trying to branch out on some of the stuff I read, and I'll continue to do that, hopefully. I mean, I do love my superhero comics. So
me too.
I did also like the fact that the whole thing was being narrated by a dead person. It is a trope in literature that I sometimes enjoy. It's like, wait a minute, this is all, he's literally the narrator, and he's telling it, and he's dead. And he even finishes it while he's lying dead. So,
Yeah,
it's just, like I said, it's a trope I kind of enjoy, even though it's kind of weird. It's like, wait a minute. That's a dead person talking. So
yes, it was good job, Charles. Pat yourself on the back.
It was a good comic. It was short. I mean, we didn't talk.
It was the right length. One of the things I was going to say.
Yeah, it was definitely a page count. Not even that, but I mean, it really makes sense too on the shorter thing, because it's going for, it was in a pulp. It's a pulp thing that was in an anthology type magazine, and it has to be of a certain length. So it's got to get in and get out and get done. And everything was just bang, 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 bang. It was great.
Not too long, not too short, nothing mm-hmm. superfluous, nothing left out that you needed.
Yeah.
It was so well done.
I would not mind having more stories of him, the stories he was writing about. That would be good, and it would be kind of cool if the author actually went and fleshed that out at some point. I don't know if they would. I just, that made me want to read about his Western exploits.
Well, to tie this in, we just interviewed Mark Resnicek, drummer for the Toadies, and his big deal was Western comics back in the day, that Kirby stuff, Joe Simon stuff. This could be a modern day version of that would be, that's just ripe for the picking.
Yes.
I think.
Yes.
Well, hey, this was a podcast about comic books again.
Yes.
That we read.
Yes, it was.
And we talked about them like we do.
Yes.
There is some mail that you forwarded me.
Oh, that's right. That's right. In between when we had our technical difficulties two nights ago, and tonight when we've had kind of a marathon, this little bit, we're doing about a 20-25 minute podcast, and we had a wonderful, amazing conversation with Mark. Say his last name again, because I mess.
Who? Mark Resnicek.
Mark Resnicek, I'm going to put out that conversation we got to have with him on it's going to be its own podcast, because it's long enough that I don't want, if I put it with this, it's going to be just way too long. So it's going to be its own separate pod. It's going to be cool, and it'll probably come out. I'm hoping it'll come out. It'll already be out when y'all hear this. So I've lost the train of thought. Oh, yeah, I got an email.
In between the technical difficulties.
That's right. I got an email. And I sent it to Hob, because it is a very good friend of Hob's, who I have met, who is a very nice guy. And he's written us before, correct?
Yes.
Yes, he's written us
and
before.
And so James Delgado, James Delgado writes...
The great James Delgado. If you're going to... If you're going to be awesome enough to email us multiple times, you are awesome. And he also gave us a 5-star review, which is just one of the most beautiful reviews I've ever read. So
the great James Delgado wrote, subject line, no. Goldfish do not, in fact, have short attention spans. Sadly, they have no long-term memory. Do you know how easy this is for me? Do you have any idea how fucking easy this is? This is a fucking joke. And I'm sorry you can't do this. I really am, because I wouldn't have to fucking sit here and watch you fumble around and fuck it up. Love the show, guys. James.
Thank you, James. Thank you very much.
Well played, sir. Well played.
You have put me in my place.
Touche.
So I guess that's our first edition.
So there you go. So hey, write me, write Charles, write us, and... Look, now you can say you've been on a podcast where the world-famous Mark Reznicek has been on,
yes.
The drummer for the Toadies.
Yes.
So there you go. So yes, thank you, James, for the email. So yes. Is this the point? Are we at the point in time where we suggest comics for the next go-around?
We are absolutely at that point. Yes. Yes. This is when we
do
it.
Well, then I will
go
first.
Oh, fuck. Am I supposed to know what we're going to read?
What?
No, I'm just kidding.
You're so funny, I forgot to laugh.
But you did laugh.
I did. It was a fake laugh, though. It wasn't a real laugh.
That was real.
Yes. That's exactly where I was getting it from Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm going to suggest the collected edition John Constantine, Hellblazer, Volume 1.
Ooh.
Original Sins.
Okay, sweet.
It's on the Hoopla.
All right, that's very cool. Yeah.
I decided to go a little outside of my comfort zone, but something I read part of back in the day, or a collection back in the day. I don't even know if it was this one, but anyways, it's just good. That's what I'm suggesting.
No, that's great. I think I've seen that and looked at it and gone, I kind of want to read that, and I've just never done it. So that's great. My suggestion also, DC Comics. We're on a thing right now.
What the heck?
Yeah, I know.
Huh?
I want to read Batman Volume 1, The Court of Owls.
Awesome.
Yeah. I want to do some... I guess I'm kind of on a DC Batman kick. I mean, I did the Dark Knight Returns. Oh, so guys, there is a quick real Charles was wrong thing. I posted today. This is Friday sometime in May, May 24th. And I just dropped this morning late the episode 4. The one with the Dark Knight Returns in it. So while we were talking on the previous pod, Frank Miller came up, and I realized that this morning, as I'm trying to quickly type up the notes on the feed, I put in the Dark Knight Returns, written and drawn by Alan Moore.
Whoopsie.
So during the podcast, prior to this one, I went on after that and I pulled it up and I edited it. So hopefully before anybody sees this, it will have corrected, because I edited it to the correct Frank Miller. And it was just sometimes when you're just in a hurry and writing things, I'm like, I don't have to look up who wrote this. I know who wrote it. It wasn't Alan Moore. So.
Well, there we go. Well, then one last thing before we leave. In between, we had the technical difficulties, and that's why we're finishing up recording this episode now. In between last time and this time, I found out that, unfortunately, my very good friend Eddie Melendez passed away unexpectedly. He's my age. He was 49 years old, and I just found out today. I can't describe. I still feel like a punch in the gut, shock, disbelief. And just, if anybody's listening that knew him, you knew he was just the sweetest, nicest guy, and condolences to his family. And I just wanted to mention that in him, Dr. Edwin Thomas Melendez, So yeah, I don't know. Just, I felt like it was something to say, and I don't dedicate this episode to him or something. That just seems weird, but just wanted to mention him today. So there's that. Charles, thank you so much for doing everything you do for the podcast. Thank you for, like I always say, doing the heavy lifting, producing, editing, publishing, doing the podcast with me, recording it. Of course, I'm going to be all weird about stuff for a little while. Thank you for being my friend. Thank you to everybody that listens. Thank you to all my friends out there and family. it's just weird when stuff like this happens. So love everybody. Thank you all for listening. Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough when that happens. I'm sorry, man. Thank you for doing this with me as well. Everybody, thank you very much for listening. We will see you next time, or, well, we won't see you. Hopefully you'll enjoy this the next time. Thank you all for listening. Have a great rest of whatever you're doing, whatever day or night you're doing it in. Bye.
Bye.